When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
Jeff's Guitar Clinic is a multifaceted shop offering guitars, amplifiers, and all accessories, guitar lessons for all ages, and instrument repair of the highest quality. Take the scenic drive to beautiful Fort Atkinson and see what total customer satisfaction is all about. Call Jeff's Guitar Clinic today at 920-723-1733. That's Jeff's Guitar Clinic at 920-723-1733. Jeffsguitar.com.
Welcome to another podcast at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. Joining us now, State Representative Dana Wachs. He is running for governor. The Republicans tried to challenge him off the ballot, but it didn't work, Dana.
Morning, Sly. How are you?
Good. How are you? So the Republicans must be pretty scared of you. They literally tried to get you off the ballot.
Well, Scott Walker never misses a chance to try to disenfranchise people, that's for sure. But, yeah, I think they're concerned that if I'm the nominee, I'm going to beat Scott Walker, and I'm quite sure I will. If you take a look at the support I'm getting in the north and the western part of the state and all across the state, we're putting together coalitions. He knows he's got his work on his hands if I'm going to be the nominee. So, he recently took my chronic wasting disease bill and implemented it after doing nothing for 8 years on chronic wasting disease. He suddenly takes my bill and implements it as strategy for DADCAP and for the DNR. He's in Eau Claire 2 to 3 times a week sometimes. He knows that I'm going to do really well up in that area, and that's concerning him, and it should.
This is anecdotal, but I was in Milwaukee this past weekend, and I went downtown to take a look at the new arena, and I had my Suburban, which, of course, proudly has my Dana Walk sticker on it. All my cars do. The whole fleet, Dana. And a older couple walked up, and they're giving me the big thumbs up. And I thought, well, maybe these are Bucks fans or what's going on here? And I said, I rolled my window down, and they're like, love Dana Walks. We went to a house party for him. We're for him. He's the guy that can win. We really like him. He's progressive. And I thought that was a good sign.
Yeah, it is a good sign. And we're having that happen more and more. I've got Dana Walks sticker on my car, of course, and all over the state. We're driving down the highway. People are passing us with the thumbs up, and it's happening more and more. We've been traveling about 2,000 miles a week all over the state, and it's paying off. I mean, we've met people all over the place. We are building larger and larger fundraising events, and we feel good about this.
And yet still, most people haven't tuned into this race yet. They're just starting to, and a lot of people don't know you. So the State Journal did a piece the other day that pointed out that there's sort of different emphasis when it comes to economics, and they stressed, in your case, that you were talking about making sure that you would restore full coverage for Badger Care and then deal with teacher salaries. So tell me a little bit about your economic plan for the state if you were to become governor.
Well, there's several aspects to this. Number one, if you want a vibrant economy, you've got to make sure that the middle class is expanding. You've got to make sure that the middle class has got family-sustaining wages and is growing. In Wisconsin right now, our middle class is shrinking. We're the third fastest shrinking middle class in the United States, right behind Louisiana. So how do we deal with that? If we get money into the middle class will spend it and the economy will become robust. But Walker went to war on unions, and that is a tactic that doesn't work in terms of expanding an economy, because it's unions that brought us the middle class in the first place. So what I want to do is roll back right to work. I want collective bargaining back, and we want to roll back Walker's anti-prevailing wage legislation. And I don't want to sound like Sarah Palin in any way, but if you look to the west of Eau Claire, just look to the west, and you can see prosperity right across the Wisconsin-Minnesota border. Minnesota didn't go to war on their unions. They still have collective bargaining. And on average, the Minnesota family makes $8,000 more per year than the Wisconsin family. So, you know, that's issue number one. We're also going to have a minimum wage of $15 an hour. I think we need to reenact the gubernatorial wage board, which has historically been looking at minimum wages over the years. Well, Walker did, you know, he literally, dispensed with that board when he took office.
I'll bet he did.
We need to bring that back. And we,
I'll bet he did. Pronto.
Yeah, he did immediately. You know, we need to make darn sure people are getting fair, fair day's work, pay for the fair, for a fair day's work. And that's not been happening with Walker. Issue number two in terms of...
Before you move to the next one, on the $15 an hour thing, how do you differentiate your view on the $15 minimum wage versus your opponents in the Democratic primary?
Well, I'm not sure what all they're saying in terms of that. Some of them are not talking about a $15 minimum wage. They're saying it depends on the industry and it depends on the region of the state. So there's not unanimity on that issue across the board with the 10 Democrats.
Well, the way I read it in this article, some were for phasing it in. Others were for a $12 minimum wage. Others were had this caveat or that caveat. It appears as though there was no caveat in your proposal. You want the $15 minimum wage and you want it now.
Well, we're going to implement it over a four-year period of time.
Okay.
I'm not sure what article you're reading, but... Our policy, if you go to danawalks.com, it's very clear that it will be implemented
over the course of four years.
Yeah,
they made that a little unclear in the article then. So
yeah, I think I read that article as well, and there's some errors in it, to be quite frank.
Imagine that. So over 4 years, it would be implemented.
Yep.
Okay. So... You were going on to your second point.
So in terms of the economy, what we need to do is make darn sure that the middle class is expanding and not contracting. We need to make sure that that the middle class has disposable income, because it's the middle class that does all the buying of new products, buying a new cars, and the building of new homes. That's where the economy is generated, is it the middle class. Well, the middle class has not been supported since Walker threw the unions out. But number two on our economic proposals are that we want to make sure that businesses are expanding and growing in all 72 counties. Now, if you take a look at what Walker's done in terms of business development, we're dead last in the nation, 50th in business development. I mean, you can't do any worse. And so what's he doing to end is this Hail Mary pass with this Foxconn outfit. He's going to throw $3 billion into one company buried deep within one industry. And what that does is makes the whole state of Wisconsin dependent on the market share of Foxconn. I mean, how ridiculous. You can't do that. It's dangerous. And it takes away from education and the like. Just for a minute, just think what we could do with $3 billion in business development. I mean, you could have 10,000 new businesses spread across 72 counties with $300,000 of a minimum seed money. Think about that. And that would be an economy that would be diverse. It would be everything from restaurants to software companies to hardware companies to who knows what. And it'd be spread across 72 counties, not buried deep in the southern part of the state right next to the Illinois border, where Illinois will benefit. That's the kind of forward-looking plan that we have developed. We've developed a plan where there'll be a venture capital fund. It'll be a fund not of taxpayer money, but of contributions. You can go to your stockbroker and invest in the Wisconsin venture capital fund, and your money will be invested in new businesses across Wisconsin. Another part of our business development plan is that we're going to refinance student loans of kids and folks in Wisconsin. We can free up many hundreds of millions of dollars if we can refinance student loans to a lower interest rate. And we're going to also refinance student loans for kids in other states, provided they agree to come back to Wisconsin. We want to bring our kids home. We want to bring the brains that have left the state, have fled Scott Walker. We want them to come home. And that's part of our package. There's a synergy when you bring young minds and good minds together. And we want that to be here in Wisconsin. So we're going to invest in regular folks and their business startups. And we're going to do it across the state, not just at Foxconn.
So there's a lot of people that I talk to as I have traveled the state over the last 10 years who just simply, they can't find a job in their hometown. I think it was in Phillips, you know, the county seat in Price County. And
yes.
I told me, he goes, like, you know, once a couple of these shops closed up here, there was nothing for anybody to do, and there's just no hope. There's no point in staying here. Well, that certainly is no way to run a state.
Well, you know, what we need to do in the northern part of the state, many parts of the state don't have broadband. I mean, you can't develop business without broadband. And that's something we've got to invest in. Walker's been turning down federal grant money for the development of broadband since he took office. I mean, that's our federal tax money. He keeps turning it down. You know, we've got to invest in broadband. We've got to invest in infrastructure. Functionally, broadband is infrastructure for this century. Not only that, but take a look at the roads and the schools in the rural parts of the state, frankly, all of the state in terms of roads. You know, I was giving a speech up in Wausau a month or so ago, and I got done with the speech, and I'm working my way through the crowd, and this woman walks up to me, and she says, you know, in England, they drive on the left side of the road, and I had no idea where she was going with this. And she said, but here in Marathon County, we drive on what's left. I mean, rural Wisconsin is being ignored by this governor. Rural Wisconsin needs to be considered an active and functional part of this state and this state government's policies. They've been ignored, and it's time for that to change.
I recently saw for the first time Minnesota, even though it has 200 some thousand less people than Wisconsin, has more jobs.
Yeah, they do. We have 215,000 more people in Wisconsin than Minnesota does. But they still have more people working, more jobs, people working in jobs than we do here in Wisconsin. I mean, Minnesota's economy is vibrant. Their roads are new. Their thinking is new and forward. I mean, do you realize that Eau Claire is now on the MnDOT transportation plan for trains? Minnesota wants to put trains between Eau Claire and Minnesota because they get it. They understand that the more people that are on trains, the less wear and tear there is on the Minnesota roads. And so when we cross that border, they want as many people on trains as humanly possible. They get it, and they understand the needs of people.
Oh, you're gonna anger the right-wing talk show hosts in southeast Wisconsin with that sort of talking, Dana.
Well,
they hate
I'm
mass
not
transit. They hate
I'm not
mass
in
transit.
This race for the right-wing talk shows in southeastern Wisconsin.
No, I mean, they despise the notion of doing anything collectively. They just really think that we're 500 and 5 million, you know, individuals, that's it, and, you know, dog eat dog.
Yeah, I don't know what their thinking is. I mean, just from a business perspective, Walker should never have turned down that $810 million in train subsidy from the federal government. I mean, number one, right now there'd be high-speed rail going between Chicago and Madison and eventually through Eau Claire to the Twin Cities. I mean, everywhere that train stops, there'd have been new businesses. And most importantly, there would have been a lot less wear and tear on our highways. Number two, Talgo was going to be building their trains in one of the most economically depressed portions of Milwaukee. So people could have walked to work at Talgo, about somewhere between 1,000 and 1,300 jobs, would have been brought to a depressed side of portion of the city of Milwaukee. So people could have walked to work and had family-sustaining wages at that place. But instead of that, he turns down the money, and our train is literally running on tracks in California as we speak. So what's that done for Wisconsin? What in the world has that done for Wisconsin? And, you know, there's another aspect of all this. If you take a look at the investment at Foxconn, $3 billion of state money, it's probably closer to $3.5 billion now, in a total package of over $4.45 billion going to a foreign corporation. You know, I'm against that. I'm on the Weedick board. I've been against that since this thing rolled out. I'm one of two Democrats on that board, and I've been fighting this like a dog. But there's one crystalline nugget. There's one very good point that's being made with Foxconn, and nobody can deny it. And that point is, we've had the money all along. We've had the money to invest in schools. We've had the money to invest in universities. So why did Walker cut $1 billion from K through 12? And why did he cut $784 million from the universities, $235 million from the technical colleges? We've had the money all along. He just doesn't want to put it into people. He just doesn't care about people the way they need to be cared for and cared by. This is outrageous. But they can't deny that we've got the money to fund our education systems and our schools.
They can't deny it anymore. We'll pick it up from there. State Representative Dana Walks, candidate for governor at SlysOffice.com.
Injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh.
When you hire a lawyer to help you with your personal injury, you want to know that you'll have that lawyer's personal attention. With John and I, that's exactly what you'll get. With many firms, the lawyer that you see in the ad is not the lawyer who's going to be representing you in the case.
One of the differences with Mike and my practice is that when you hire us, you'll have us personally involved in your case.
Call injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh at 257-5661 for the personal attention you deserve.
We're back with State Representative Dana Walks. He is a candidate for governor. And, of course, the August 14th? Is that the day of the primary?
August 14th.
Yep. So we're getting close. So I think a lot of people would like to know where you think the state of the race is. The Wisconsin Broadcasters Association, we're going to have a debate. There was almost universal reaction in a negative way to the way they decided to pick the people that would perform in that debate. Where do you think you stand in this field right now?
Well, it's hard to tell where you stand in a field of 10 like this, but I'll tell you this. Everywhere I go, I keep, you know, running into people that have heard of us and that really like us, and I'm running into it in places you wouldn't expect. And I'll tell you what, I feel very good about this. We've been meeting people in every pocket and corner of this state. And we're not ignoring any part of the state. We're bringing together coalitions of folks from all over the state. And the functional reality is this. If I am the nominee, I will be the governor. That's how this will work. Getting through this primary is a challenge for all of us. But I'll tell you what, if you want to win in the fall, I need to be the candidate. You got to think in terms of who do you want to stand on that stage with Scott Walker in that debate. I've been fighting for. Go ahead.
Why do you think you'd be a better candidate for the November election?
I've been an advocate for people for 32 years in the courtrooms. I have fought for the little guy that's been battered by big, powerful forces for 32 years. I have brought their message successfully into the judicial system. And as a legislator, I've been doing the same thing. And I'll tell you what, 32 years in the courtroom puts me in a good position in terms of the debate with Governor Walker. I don't think he wants me to be standing on that stage with him in that debate. And I know that I want to be on that stage with him. We have lost our way in this state. Regular folks, their messages aren't heard in Madison, and by God, that's got to change, and we're going to make sure it does.
There's some the rumblings of people beginning to kind of pick at each other in this race. Matt Flynn and Tony Evers have been going after each other. Matt Flynn strongly objected to Tony Evers' proposal of lowering legislators' pay to the starting wage of a teacher. Your reaction to that, what did you think of Evers' proposal? What did you think of Flynn's reaction? And the other thing I was just going to mention is that I noticed that Malin Mitchell and Kel DeRoy's are beginning to peck at each other a little bit as well. Are you just sort of staying above the fray so far?
I'm not fighting with other Democrats. I'm in this race to win this race against Scott Walker. Yeah, I've seen some chirping and arguing amongst some of the others, but I am staying away from, I'm staying above that if humanly possible, because I'm not in this race to fight with other Democrats. We got to fight for people, and it doesn't help that message gets diluted if we start fighting among ourselves. And in terms of, the EVER proposal, you know, what we need to do is we've got to have real proposals. I mean, that's an interesting commentary that he's making with regard to that. But, you know, teachers need resources, respect, and wages. That's what they need. And we've got to get resources, respect, and wages to these teachers. And you know, monkeying around with changing legislators' pay, that's a sideshow issue. We need to let's keep our eye on the ball.
Recently, the Supreme Court came out with a decision that was very damaging to not only EPIC workers, but workers that are forced to sign these binding arbitration agreements. The New York Times says that in 1992, 2% of workers were forced into these binding arbitration contracts. It's up over 50% now. What did you think of that ruling? And is there a legislative remedy at the state level that we could make sure that workers have some protection?
I think there is at the state level legislation that could be crafted on that issue. I haven't begun to draft that legislation yet, but I'll tell you this, there is a disturbing trend both for workers and regular folks in other walks of life with these binding arbitration contracts. What you're doing is you're waiving your right to judicial due process in a court of law. When you sign those agreements, you're stuck in an arbitration rather than a jury trial or even a trial to the court. And this has been a threat. I know Russ Feingold was worried about this years ago. I mean, he crafted legislation on the federal level to try to combat this. This is a disturbing trend. What these folks are trying to do is sidestep. They're trying to sidestep the court system so that the big moneyed interests will win more and more often. You know, this is a disturbing trend. I think there needs to be federal legislation on this, and I think there can be state legislation as well. It's a difficult and complex subject, though, and we have to be very careful how we draft that legislation. But I believe there is a state solution to it. But the best solution would be a federal solution. These companies and these powerful interests need to be held accountable in a courtroom when they stray and do wrong.
The governor's reaction to the Supreme Court punting on the case with redistricting, he said that the court validated his position and that the lines for the legislature are fair. Your reaction to that?
Well, that is laughable. The court did not validate Scott Walker's position with this decision. The court remanded this to the lower court for continued process. This, I'm confident that in the end, I've been so busy, I haven't had a chance to read this decision, but I'm confident in the end, the court will rule in favor of having a republic, because that's literally where we're at. The question before the court is, do we want to continue with a republic in the United States or not? He put everybody's rights as a voter on hold. That's what the court's done with this. And Walker is standing, he's always a good one to sound off about limiting people's rights to vote. I mean, look what he did with these special elections. You know, he comes after my petitions as well to be placed on the ballot. I mean, this guy is about as far from a believer in the republic as you can get. And so, sure, he's going to mouth that this decision was in his favor. It wasn't at all. And I think in the long run, the United States Supreme Court's going to weigh in favor of having a republic. Because right now, legislators are picking their voters, not the other way around. And this is outrageous. Do you realize in 2012, the Democrats in the Assembly got 178,000 votes. I believe that's the number. It's very close to that. But 178,000 more votes than the Republicans did, and we had about a third of the seats. Now, what is that all about? You know, it's just outrageous. Scott Walker, I'm sure he's going to tout this as a victory. It's not. We're just warming up.
It's pretty interesting, though, that in the first state senate district, you can actually overcome this if you get enough people to come out and vote. It is possible this fall for the Democrats to retake the state senate. Did you spend any time up in the first senate district where Caleb Frostman won?
I have been up in the first senate district. I have not been actively involved doing doors and things like that in this race. I've got another thing that I'm working on while running for governor. But I'll tell you this, though. I have to say that I've been hitting doors for Democrats since I was 16 or 17. I have literally been involved in this stuff since my mom made me lick stamps for Hubert Humphrey in 1968. And you do get a sense when you're out hitting doors as to where people are going. Now, I haven't had time to hit doors much this year, but everybody I've talked to that have been hitting doors have been talking about how there's a groundswell out there of excitement among Democrats, and I think we're going to have a blue wave. The question is it going to be a tsunami or not? I don't know. We can't plan on a tsunami. We can't assume there's going to be a tsunami. We have to just work our tails off to win these elections this fall.
As we wrap this up, I just want to thank you for giving public voice, not just, you know, not just lip service when you're speaking to Democratic groups, but when you actually have time to go onto a broader audience on television and giving workers' rights and the restoration of collective bargaining, the ending of right to work, the ending of what they did to project labor agreements, prevailing wage, all those issues, as well as your opposition to these corporate free trade deals that have been so damaging to Wisconsin. Thank you for publicly, you know, saying your position, even when you're not speaking to, you know, just a union or Democratic crowd. Thank you for giving voice to workers. They need it.
Well, thanks, Sly, but you know what? It's easy to speak the truth. You just stand up and you spout the truth, and it's easy and fun to do, because the truth is, we've got to have labor unions active and healthy in this state. They're the only hedge we have against the powerful interest groups. And they're the only voice that regular folks have come through those unions. And by God, we're going to get them back if I'm governor. I guarantee you that.
Dana Walks, state representative from Eau Claire, candidate for governor. Be sure to vote August 14th and be sure to get involved. Dana, thanks for coming on to SlysOffice.com.
Thanks, Sly. Have a good day.
SlysOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
Making stuff matters, because when we make things in America, America makes it. American workers and families make it. Our communities make it. Consider this. For every one manufacturing job in our communities, 5 more jobs are supported. Manufacturing jobs pay an average of 10 to 50% more than service sector jobs. That allows working families to support their local businesses, schools, emergency services, and more. Creating 2.5 million new manufacturing jobs would mean at least $100 billion for our economy over the next decade. Domestic manufacturing is the green economy. It's among the cleanest, most efficient, and productive in the world. That's why the United Steelworkers and our more than 1 million members and retirees are fighting so hard to protect and grow manufacturing. Because making stuff really does matter. Join our fight. Visit usw.org and like us at facebook.com/steelworkers. Support American manufacturing. Buy American. Buy Union.